Welcome once again to our program, The Universal Call to Holiness, or the Call of All to Holiness, Wholeness, Wholesomeness, and eventually happiness, reasonable happiness here in this life, and eternal happiness with God. We're talking with our guest who has been with us for 27 sessions on the Call to Holiness, Ron Eldred, who is professor of religion and professor of world history at John Paul II Catholic High, situated on the campus of St. Patrick's Catholic Church. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick's, which is at the corner of 19th and Poplar, or the wonderful Shamrock at the intersection of the two streets. Ron, welcome once again. We, in our discussion about Call to Holiness, we talked about how important prayer, breathing of our soul, as Augustine calls it, is if we're going to be able to climb to the mountain of holiness or wholeness, or to go through the seven mansions of Teresa, or to go around the three bases, first base, second base, third base, to reach home plate, which is seeing God face to face in heaven. So I think we got up to the point about when do the spiritual writers encourage us and point out for us it's a good time to pray.
As we ended our last session on, we quoted St. Paul, to pray without ceasing. And so that would seem like we're supposed to be praying all the time. He says that in 1 Thessalonians 5:17. But I don't think this means that we should go around, you know, saying prayers, verbal prayers all the time, mumbling prayers all the time. But I think it does mean that we should develop a constant awareness of God's presence. We can do that even in the purgative and the early illuminative stages, you know, but obviously that takes an act of the will to do that. But as a person becomes, we're told by spiritual directors anyway, and great saints, that as a person becomes holier, that is, the person becomes more like Jesus, that the union with Christ becomes much closer, that then God, they begin to enter into that type of prayer we call contemplative prayer. And one of the benefits of that, of course, is that God makes us aware, constantly aware of his presence in some way or another. Of course, this awareness of God's presence is a form of communication, and communication is a form of prayer.
So as Adam walked in the cool of the evening with God and talked to God as two great friends, that's from the book of Genesis, that's what we're trying to do with God, converse with God, and that we try to be aware of God's presence. But there are some special times that it's really helpful to designate, if possible, to pray.
Well, I think certainly morning is a good time before the hustle and bustle of life begins, and the person should, say morning prayers, and they should, like at John Paul Catholic High School, we have the Angelus. We say the Angelus every noon, and some kinds of prayers at least stop during the day. And then certainly always should have the evening prayers, where a person should thank God for the for the benefits that they've received that day, and things of that sort.
I saw that beautiful poster somewhere. It said, "Key of the prayer should be the key that opens the lock of the door of day, and the key that locks the door of night." So morning and evening prayers are traditional times that we've been taught to pray growing up, and because they begin the day and at the end of the day.
Well, and most Catholics have been taught to say little short prayers during the day. I think they refer to these as ejaculations. The Jesus prayers one has several different forms, but one form is Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy upon me, or upon a sinner, or us sinners, or something of that sort. There's hundreds of prayers like that.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph,
yes.
Help me.
And it used to be a custom, and it should still be, it maybe is with some older Catholics, when they'd pass a Catholic church, they would always, say, Blessed be Jesus and the Most Holy Sacrament of the altar, or something like that. We could add to where I believe your present body, blood, soul, and divinity. I've heard that added to it. I guess it used to be an old Irish custom that men would tip their hat when they buy a Catholic church because of Christ being present in the Eucharist.
My dad always did that, and I learned to do that, and I've kind of forgotten it. But it's a beautiful way to recognize the presence of Jesus in the golden tabernacle and on the altar or in the church.
Well, I think it's natural that one who's aware of God's presence will want to talk to him as much as possible. And, you know, at times this means verbal prayer. At other times it could mean mental prayer. But I say as a minimum we should practice at least the morning and, you know, the evening prayers.
And that could be a little reading of the Bible to begin the day. Or it could be a little reading of the Bible to close the day. Good Protestants probably do that almost as a matter of course. And since the Vatican Council emphasized reading the Bible for us so much, I think many Catholics have tied into that wonderful practice.
Well, and of course, the tradition of reading the Bible, praying over the scriptures, is old. The Catholic tradition goes back, you know, to the Desert Fathers, you know, in the second and third century. So it's certainly nothing new by any means. It's very, very old. And if done in the right spirit, I mean, you can sit down and read the Bible just strictly as literature. You can sit down and read the Bible as a history. You've got to do more than that, I think, for it to be considered a prayer. It has to be done prayerfully. It has to be done with an awareness
that
God is present.
That God does speak to me through the readings of the sacred scriptures.
And I think another time that would be effective for prayer, obviously, before making big decisions or... if one's having problems, especially to pray about things like that.
I think that's really crucial to ask for God. I think we have to ask from wise people advice, but we have to have God's guidance from the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of wisdom, also particularly in big decisions.
Okay. Well, a lot of times we can be answered. God answers us through wise people.
Beautiful. And sometimes we forget about that we're wanting, again, a burning bush to appear to us and God to speak us and tell us, go down and set the people free. And Moses, go down and set the people free. What about making prayer a regular part? We talked about morning prayers is a good time. Evening prayers is a good time. When else is a good time? How else do we pray throughout the day?
We can make a prayer of a lot of regular daily activities. For example, from time to time when we are studying, reflect on the deeper meaning of the subjects that we are studying. Students can certainly do that. I teach history and... as we teach history, the fact the book that we use is called Christ the King, Lord of History. The main theme of that, of course, is the most important event that ever happened in the history of the world, of course, was the Incarnation. And the reason is because every event that ever happened before and every event that ever happened after was affected by the Incarnation. In fact, we even count our time that way, before Christ and after Christ.
B.C. and A.D., although people are, as usual, fighting anything and has a religious connotation in our culture.
But there are a lot of ways that when you study these things, you can reflect on the deeper meaning of these subjects, whether it be history or it could be anything else as far as that's concerned. In fact, there's hardly any subject that we students take in school or read on our own that doesn't have a deeper spiritual meaning.
A lot of people have read themselves into the Catholic Church by reading history.
Well, I believe it was John Henry Newman, who said that anyone that has a deep knowledge of history can't but come to believe that the Catholic Church is the church that Christ himself established. And that's one of the things that led him into the Catholic Church, primarily reading the Church Fathers and the history during that period. But certainly history is one of the main subjects where you can find all kinds of themes for meditation, but literature in general. We have John Paul II Catholic High. We have American Lit and English Lit, but there's a heavy emphasis upon the spiritual dimensions of these writers and what they've written, and music, not just sacred music, but probably any art, but especially religious art, sacred art. But even mathematics and science courses have certain, dimensions of God's creative powers and what have you. I tell my students that mathematics is nothing more than quantification of God's nature. what God has created. Certainly any course, whether it be biology or geology or whatever, there's a... Now, you do have to be careful and distinguish between the scientific method and matters that are strictly discovered by scientific matters, but they also have philosophical and theological implications. And that's the thing you don't get in the public school. Our students at John Paul, when they take math, they study math. When they take biology, they study biology, just the same biology they study at North or South High School. But then there's some room there for an ability to add those other dimensions, the spiritual dimensions, to it at times.
Well, the complexity of the human body would make a person raise a question about who designed this? Who put this complex, the human brain, which is much more complex than a high-powered computer.
Well, of course, I'm sure you're aware of that whole debate now about intelligent design, which isn't new. The Catholic Church is, St. Thomas is one of his five ways, of course, had to do, with a design. But right now I've been working on a script for a series we're going to deliver on apologetics. We've been working on that for some time, and that's one of the subjects we're going to get into.
Right.
When we talk about Thomas's five ways and looking at, we'll get into explaining this whole debate and what that whole issue is involved with.
About creative design.
Yes.
Wonderful. That'll be a very popular subject.
But I think we can meditate on the things of God while we recreate during hiking and running and walking and the like. A person can be aware of God's presence and pray.
I know a lot of people who walk and pray their rosary.
Well, yeah, certainly, and you see pictures of, I always see John Paul walking with his rosary through the gardens of Vatican Gardens there in different pictures. But I say, I think trying to meditate when one, even in a part-time job or when performing services or create things for others, I don't think there's any honest work that can't be performed for the benefit of others and the glory of God. What's more, what better time to pray than when one is performing spiritual and corporal works of mercy for the love of God and neighbor? Perhaps St. Paul had such activities in mind when he urged us to pray all the time. As I said, I don't think he had in mind we go around mumbling, verbal prayers. I think he also meant, though, that we should have a disposition that makes us ready to do God's will at all times. I think that was also
an openness to God.
Yes.
And sometimes we can't be thinking about God because if a surgeon is performing a very delicate operation, he's got to keep his mind on the intricacies of the operation.
Sure.
Or whatever it might be, a person. I remember there was a famous general who said before a battle, he said, "Lord, I may forget you, but do not forget, in the heat of the battle, but do not forget me."
Forget me, yes.
Okay, well, how about... how do we prepare for prayer? Is there such a thing as preparing for prayer?
One of the best books I ever read on this subject was Romano Guardini's book. He wrote a book on the Mass where he explains, because that's a great prayer, how to prepare for the Mass, and then he also wrote a book on the Rosary. And how to pray. I don't remember what the original title was, and it was probably originally written in either German or Italian. He was of Italian background, but if I recall right, he was raised and lived most of his life in Germany. But he was one of the great theologians of the early 20th century, before Vatican II. In fact, he's considered one of the contributors to one of the great contributors and one who stimulated, of course, Vatican II, along with many other, of course, but he's certainly one of the greatest. And many of the ideas that I've gotten on how to properly pray have come from Guardini's works. But as he tells us, before we pray, we should properly prepare ourselves. And a lot has been written about how to pray by spiritual writers over the centuries. But in order to communicate with God, one must be aware of his presence and composed or recollected at least at a minimum. We simply can't carry on a conversation with God if we're distracted by what is going on around us or we have our mind elsewhere, if we're preoccupied, in other words. And to pray, one must learn to free oneself from attractions or distractions from without and turmoil from within ourselves. And this calming of the self is called composure or recollection. We delivered a series, Keeping Holy the
Lord. The Day of the Lord, Keeping Holy
and,
the Lord.
And we spent quite a bit of time talking about how to prepare for Mass. And most of what we said that applied, maybe all of what we said as we prepare for Mass, becoming collected or recollected, which means focus, basically. And so that's really what Guardini's talking about here. A person who's distracted by what is going on around him or herself or is daydreaming is not aware of God's presence. And so only the composed person, only the person who's recollected, only the person who's focused can be fully aware of what's going on around him or herself. And I think only he or she is wide awake and is present and is ready to communicate with God. That is, you know, to pray effectively.
I liked your statement about we could be unfocused by attractions, good things,
yes.
Or we could be unfocused by distractions, just kind of worldly things.
Or unfocused by the fact that we're daydreaming, or we may be focused, but we're not focused on the right thing.
Right. And then, but also, not only getting away from the turmoil outside, noise and rush and busyness, but even it's hard to what the Quakers call center down from the turmoil inside of us. So it kind of takes we almost have to shift gears. And I think maybe a person experiences that when they go into the Perpetual Adoration Chapel. It takes a little time to kind of quiet down and kind of become aware of the presence of the Lord and the golden monstrance there under the appearance of the consecrated bread.
Well, as we pointed out during our series on Keeping Holy the Lord's Day, composure is not easy. Becoming recollected, and we use the word recollect because it comes from the idea of collecting oneself, and which is scattered all over the place. Not literally, of course, but in a symbolic sense.
I think the Germans call it Zerrissenheit, which means torn to pieces hood. Mm-hmm. We're pulled in seven different directions at the same time.
Well, focusing is not easy. It's composure is not easy. It's not easy to achieve. It's not easy to maintain because the attractions in our society and the inner turmoil that modern living causes us is constantly tearing us apart, as you just said in the German expression there. And as we discussed then, during this series, Keeping Holy the Lord's Day, one must diligently practice achieving this state of mind, that is, the state of mind of and body and spirit of composure. And so while praying, we should constantly try to be aware of God's presence and to pay careful attention to what we are saying or thinking.
So it's that idea of focusing. I know I had one parishioner tell me not so long ago, anytime she went into the Blessed Sacrament Chapel, she noticed visibly that her blood pressure dropped. And she wasn't aware why she seemed to get a little colder in the Blessed Sacrament Chapel, but she said, I realized that's what happened. I had stopped racing, and I'd calmed down, and even physically I noted that there was a change in my metabolism and my thought processes. So, as you say, focusing isn't easy, but it's a wonderful part of our ability to relate to God in conversation.
Well, I think all of us could relate to the fact that when we go to Mass or any other types of public worship, any type of liturgy, which that means literally public worship, our minds stray very easily. When we start saying the Our Father, we may start out with the intention of focusing and being attentive, you know, and meaning what we're saying. And before we know it, we get about halfway through and we all of a sudden wake up and we're not listening, you know, to ourselves and paying attention. And that's true of all the way through the whole Mass. And that's just as true, I think, of our private prayers. But particularly if we're using formula prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly using prayers that someone else has written and we're trying to make them our own, and because they seem to fit the particular situation. Yeah, but it's awfully easy for our minds to start straying, for us to be distracted by things. And what we have to, as I tell my students, we constantly have to use our will to bring ourselves back all the time to the center, back to, so that we're focusing on what we're doing and what we're saying. And I like, you know, I tell the kids, you know, it happens to me all the time. I might, before we get through the Our Father, I've had to bring myself back 5 times just to get through that short little prayer.
Sure. I suppose one of the times I don't have to force myself to focus is when I'm really in trouble or praying for some
great crisis.
Lord, out of the depths I cry to you, as the psalmist says. So I think that's good that you're pointing out how difficult it is to focus.
Well, people shouldn't think there's something wrong with them if they have,
sure.
If they do. I think St. Teresa of Avila said something to the effect that when you have these kinds of distractions, they're just sort of like a bee buzzing around or something
flies,
like that.
Right.
Yeah, flies and you know,
but gently,
but you don't want to let it that overwhelm you and overtake mm-hmm. you. You want to. I mean, it pleases the Lord, I think, when people try to use their will to constantly be coming back to the center and focusing and what have you. I think that's a very pleasing thing. Maybe God allows that because, first, we have free will, but secondly, because he's testing us, you know, and it's a kind of a trial, I guess.
There was a book that we were required to read in seminary called The Soul of the Apostolate by Abbé Chatard. And he made the somewhat startling statement, to me at least, that there are 3 kinds of work. One is manual labor, digging ditches. Second is studying, trying to focus and learn new things. And thirdly, prayer, and that prayer is the most difficult work of all. So that kind of surprised me, but it was encouraging because then I realized, well, okay, I just can't expect to pray easily without, as you've been mentioning over and over, the great saints tell us we've got to put some effort and focus and determination into it.
I know this Soul of the Apostle is considered one of the classics.
Well, you heard of that.
Oh, yes. In fact, I think it's up there with Imitation of Christ. Pius X, it was his favorite spiritual book. And he kept it in a little stand next to his bed.
Really?
He was a saint. He was a person.
Sure.
His body is still incorrupt even yet today.
St. Pius X?
Yes.
Really?
Extremely holy man.
Didn't know that. Well, I didn't. I thought The Soul of the Apostolate was an old-time book that had been kind of lost in memory.
It's still out. I think Tan Publishers, I think Tan puts it out, if
okay.
I recall right.
But I sure didn't know it ranked in the same order of the Soul, Imitation of Christ. Some of the great classics
yes.
of Catholic literature.
Thomas A. Kempis, The Imitation of Christ.
Okay, well, do you have any final words we want to say? What if I haven't learned to pray? Is any age an okay time to pray, learn to pray? Can we always learn?
Oh, yes. We're all called to holiness, and the holier we become, the more like Jesus, the closer the relationship we have with God the Father, and the greater our friendship with Him. And, you know, prayer is a communication between friends. And now's the time of our lives that to learn. I mean, I don't care how young you are. How to pray. This is what I tell my kids, you know, when I teach the younger kids. And it is only by doing so that we can achieve an intimate relationship with God in this life and to better prepare for a life with Him forever in heaven. And our prayer life reflects the intimacy of our relationship with God. And progress in it comes in stages and must follow a development through higher and higher stages that we've tried to explain in the last several sessions. And the Catholic Church has accumulated a vast wealth of knowledge about the stages of prayer and holiness over the centuries. And as I said, these talks are intended to try to provide our listeners with the knowledge necessary to achieve an intimate relationship with God.
I wanted to add, as you were talking about, it's never too late to learn to pray. I've been really impressed how many grandparents have been very instrumental in teaching their little grandchildren to pray because maybe their parents don't have time to teach them, or maybe their parents don't even know how to pray very well. I believe it was Pope John the 23rd who said what an influence his elderly grandfather had on him when he was growing up about learning how to pray. And older people have certainly much more experience in the art of prayer, which I think we should call it, is something we really have to. It's a real skill, and an artistic skill we learn. But I think in many cases, grandparents are holding and helping bridge the grandchildren into a way of faith and life. They teach them the rosary, or they see grandmother, granddad playing the rosary, and they get an interest in it.
I think a lot of this legacy that we have, that we've been talking about, that goes back 2,000 years in the history of the church and our great spiritual directors, our great saints, a lot of that's been lost. Not completely, of course, and I think it's beginning to make a resurgence. But I think so many of the young Catholics today have either not been taught this at all, or unfortunately, or they haven't been taught anything. They've just been away from the church. Or thirdly, the other alternative is they've gotten into various kinds of New Age spirituality, and that's certainly, in my opinion, is more of a counterfeit type of spirituality, certainly compared to the Desert Fathers and the great saints of the church over the last 2,000 years.
Say a word or two. We've just got a couple minutes left about praying in general. We've kind of finishing up on this topic.
Well, St. Teresa of Avila advises us in her Life of St. Teresa of Jesus not to be too intellectual about our prayer life. She tells us not to tire the intellect, but just to speak with and delight in Him. I'm quoting from her now. And not wear ourselves out in composing syllogisms. End of quote. Such acts, she assures us, contain a great amount of sustenance, and in this sense, she leads us simply to look at Him who looks at us. I'm not asking that you draw out a lot of concepts or make long and subtle reflections with your intellect. I'm not asking you to do anything more than look at Him. Here, the Holy Cure of ours once was asked why he sat for long hours before the Blessed Sacrament, saying nothing. And he said something to the effect that he and the Lord simply lovingly gazed at one another. And these, of course, were truly close friendships with God. I'm talking about St. Teresa of Avila and St. The Cure of Ours.
Okay, Ron. Well, that closes, I think, beautifully our discussion on prayer, one of the most important indispensable means of requiring the universal and fulfilling the universal call to holiness, wholeness, wholesomeness, and happiness. So may God bless you always and in always.